Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Faith Christian Podcast. At Faith Christian, our purpose is to help people find and follow Jesus. For more information about Faith Christian, check out our website, fccnp.org, or stop by on a Sunday morning. We'd love to meet you. Now, we hope you enjoy this recent teaching from Faith Christian Church. Hey, great to see you today. So glad you're here. Glad we get to spend this time together. I'm going to take a couple minutes. I want to tell you about a couple of brand new things that are happening within the life of the church that we want you to know about. The first one is for moms. And of all the things I am in the world, a mother is not one of them. So I've invited a mom, there she is, Ashley, to tell ladies, if you'll pay attention to Ashley, and she can tell you about this brand new event we have coming up for moms.
Sure. Hi, I'm Ashley Watson. And we are working on starting a mom's group. I'm working with Ashley McCleary, so if you find one of the Ashleys in the church, you'll get the information you need. But we are hoping to start at my house on Friday, April 26th at 7 p.m. You might have seen it on the screen during the announcements. We're calling ourselves the Messy Buns. So, but this, we're hoping to just have a soft place to land for moms in the church and to be able to support each other. And really, whether your baby is 6 days old or 60 years old, you are welcome. I just think there's something really beautiful about mothers coming together from different seasons of life and just being able to say, hey, you're doing a really great job here. I know this is hard. Or, hey, you've lived through this season. Can you help me with this? So if that sounds like something that you would like in your life or that you want to help us build, please find me or Ashley McCleary, and we will give you directions to my house.
Thank you, Ashley. We also have a brand new program coming up for men. We're starting a men's group that's going to meet on the first Sunday of every month before service from 8:30 to 9:30. And so, guys, you would be welcome to be a part of this. If you've been looking for a place to dig in a little deeper, get to know some of the other men in the church, do a little Bible study together. This study will happen 8:30 to 9:30 on the first Sunday of every month. And so we hope that you'll be here. Guys, you'll be here for that as well. Do also want to mention to you, we are in the registration process and sign up process for our Summer Vacation Bible School. This is one of our biggest events that happens around here every year, every summer. And you see the dates and all the stuff. You can go to our website, fccnp.org/VBS, to register, or there's a table in the back. You can register. There's also places to sign up to help. We do need lots of hands to make this a successful event. And if you didn't get one last week, back there on the, there's none more on the table. You can steal this one from me if you didn't get one last week. This is our summer schedule. Some things going on for your family. Want to be sure you're saving some dates and get that in front of your family and on your calendar as quickly as possible. Well, one day Jesus was asked, hey, Jesus, what's the most important thing that we should do? As we seek to be good God followers, good God's people, what's the most important thing for us to do? What's the most important commandment that we should follow? And Jesus simply answered like this: love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And so for the last two and a half months, we've been in this sermon series that we're calling And Mind. And the idea behind this sermon series has been that we're talking about the issue of mental health, because not talking has not been working. And for years, decades, we've tried to hide the fact that sometimes we deal with mental health crises, mental health challenges in our own lives. We try to make it look like we've got it all together, even when we don't. And so, because I think the church should be leading this conversation, and because, fortunately, this conversation is one that we're having as a society more and more often, I thought it would be important for us to take a look together as a church at this topic of mental health and talk about what the Scripture has to say about it. And I hope that you've been here for most of these. If you haven't, I hope you've gone to our podcast or to our website or YouTube page and listened, watched the sermons, watched the services that you've missed, so you can stay kind of up to speed of where we've been in this series. Today is the last one of these. We're wrapping this series up. And so to wrap it up, and I kind of mentioned this last week as well, but I do want to just say thank you, church, for supporting me. This took, I'll be honest with you, it took a lot of courage for me to do this. I was very apprehensive about this series, but your response, your appreciation for what has been said and what we've been doing in this has been very, very healthy for me. But I especially want to say thank you to those of you who have taken a step in the last 2.5 months since we've been talking about this. You have taken a step towards better mental health. You've called the doctor. You made the appointment. You've started seeing a therapist. You've maybe you started taking some medicine. You've started coming back to church. And for many of you, it's what you've stopped doing. The step you've taken is to stop doing something in order to pursue better mental health. And that took great courage for you to do that, to make that call, to put that those restrictions on screen time in your home. That took great courage for you to do that. I'm proud of you, and I thank you for doing that. So as we wrap up this conversation, this sermon series today, we have to do so knowing that the conversation cannot end just because this list of sermons does end. And one of the things that I've become convinced of over the last few months is that there are two kinds of people in the church, in the world, in our community. There are two kinds of people. The first kind of people are those of us who have experienced mental stress at some point in our lives. The second type of people are liars, because we all have. We've all been there. The struggle to maintain good mental health is real. And not talking is not working. Let me say that again. Not talking is not working. I've said that every week. Nothing gets better in the dark. So we have to continue this conversation. So let me begin today's message by just kind of, by way of recap over the last 2.5 months, some of the things we've talked about. Let me just give you some simple ways that you can destroy your mental health. Yes, my tongue is firmly planted in my cheek here. But here's, if you want to know how to destroy your mental health, you don't want to have good mental health, here's some ways you can do it. First one, we talk about this a lot. Cut back on sleep. If you want to destroy your mental health, just cut back on sleep. The data is irrefutable that our decline in sleep as a culture is impacting our mental health in a negative way. Do you want to hurt your mental health? Stay up late. Fry perfectly good brain cells on worthless television programming or screen time. Cut back on sleep. Here's the second thing you do. If you want to kill your mental health, number two, never get any exercise, never go outside. We are paying a high price for our sedentary lifestyles. I just saw another study this week that says that any sort of physical activity will help delay mental decline in senior citizens. Any sort. And God created us to enjoy His creation. And so just 15 minutes a day of sunlight, it's a beautiful day outside, you have homework today, be outside for 15 minutes at least today, and let that sun hit your face, because it will have a huge impact on your mental health. If you want to destroy your mental health, here's number three, isolate yourself. Avoid people, stay all by yourself. Tell yourself that because you have lots of contacts, you have lots of friends. Keep believing the myth that watching other people's lives on your screen on social media means you have community. It's a myth. You want to destroy your mental health, isolate yourself. Here's a fourth one. You want to destroy your mental health? Ignore Sabbath. And Sabbath is the way that God created our bodies to do a rhythm of rest and work. And Sabbath is a way that God created your body to function on a regular interval of rest. So if you want to destroy your mental health, do that. Just ignore it. Cram as much as you can into your schedule. One deadline after another. Leave zero margin in your life to rest physically, to rest mentally, to rest emotionally, or to rest spiritually so you can reconnect with God. Ignore Sabbath. Here's number five. If you want to destroy your mental health, avoid opportunities to serve other people. Make your life all about one goal, you. Your own personal happiness. Never let it cross your mind that maybe you were put on this earth to be a blessing to someone else. Avoid opportunity to serve. It's number six, while you're at it, cultivate ingratitude. Cultivate a spirit of ingratitude. Make yourself miserable every day by focusing on what you don't have instead of what you do have. Cultivate ingratitude. And finally, if you want to destroy your mental health, number seven, disconnect from God. He is the ultimate source of truth, security, and stability. So if you want to destroy your mental health, that's how you do it. Now, I say all of that to make a point. So much of the mental anguish that many experience is simply the body's normal response to trying to adapt to an abnormal way of living. We have tried to normalize a toxic way of doing life. Go, go, go. Never sleep. Constantly stay inside, staring at little screens all day long, and we think we're not going to pay a price for this. We're telling our bodies to get used to living in a way they were not designed to live. And our bodies are rebelling, and the rebellion begins in our minds. And Jesus said, love God with all your heart, soul, and your mind. And what we often do when that rebellion in our bodies begins to take place, a lot of times we make matters worse by self-medicating. Oh, I'll just have a couple of drinks every night to dull the edge. Oh, I'm just going to binge on Netflix and get my mind off things and stay up all night. Or maybe I'll watch pornography, or maybe I'll go on Amazon and find something to buy. And what we're doing is we are temporarily dulling the pain, but in the long term, we're making ourselves sicker. I think one of the signs of a mature person is that a mature person has the courage to regularly ask themselves this question: is what I'm doing helping me move towards where I want to be? Is what I'm doing, are the habits that I'm have become a part of my life, are these things helping me pursue, helping me move towards where I want to be? Is the way I'm doing life right now helping me become the person I want to become? Because here's what's true of every single one of us. We cannot choose our struggles, but we can always choose our strategies. We can't always choose what complications we're going to come in life, what difficulties we're going to have to navigate, but we can always choose our strategies. Life is going to throw some hard things at you, and you don't get to pick what those hard things are, but you do get to decide, how am I going to respond? You see, wellness, especially mental health, is not so much a destination as it is just an approach to life, a way to navigate the day by day by day of life. And as image bearers of God, as men and women who were created in the image of God, we have the God-given capacity to imagine and to pursue a future that is healthy, that has value, and that has meaning. And with power of the Holy Spirit in our lives, we can make choices. We can cope in ways that bring hope. And what is true for Christians? What is true for you as a mom or a dad? What is true for you as someone who's trying their best to follow Jesus is also true for us as a congregation, as a family, as a church. And so we've talked about where we could go as individuals, but where do we go from here as a church? Because this conversation cannot end just because the sermon series does. When I started this series way back in February, I said I have three goals in this series. The first goal was to, by talking about this, because not talking is not working. Have you heard me say that yet? Not talking. The first goal is to destigmatize having a mental health challenge. We want to take the shame away from it. We want to take the stigma away from it. The second goal was to be a place where we can offer grace and compassion to fellow strugglers. And the third goal was to encourage each other to take a step and continue taking steps in the direction of health, of faith, and of hope. And so with those goals in mind, I want to share with you two strategies today that we as a church can continue to do, that we can pursue as we choose to go forward. Two strategies we can choose as we go forward, again, because this conversation cannot end. The first one is this. We can choose, church, we can choose to practice honesty and empathy. Because not talking is not working. Have you heard me say that yet? Not talking is not working. Will you say that with me? Not talking is not working. Now that everyone's awake, will you say that with me? Not talking is not working. So let's choose honesty and empathy. Here's what that means. As fellow Christians, as brothers and sisters, as friends that go to church together, when we ask each other, how you doing? It is no longer fine to say fine if you're not fine, okay? It's no longer okay to do that. Talking about mental health challenges can no longer be taboo. We need to be honest with God, and we need to be honest with each other. Because struggling with mental health challenges does not mean you are a bad Christian. It means you're a real person who's living in a fallen world, a broken world, and you're trying to navigate it the best way you can. But it's hard. It's hard to be honest. It's hard to be real with people if the response you get is advice intended to fix you. So, church, as we go forward, let's make sure that we do not trivialize or over-spiritualize someone else's mental health challenge. Here's what I mean. By trivializing, I mean we don't say, oh, it's no big deal. Just suck it up. Suck it up, buttercup. You just need to get over it. Think some happy thoughts. Don't worry. Be happy. Brian played the song during one of his sermons, right? That's what I mean by trivializing. We can't do that anymore. And by over-spiritualizing our response, here's what I mean by that. Oh, you just need to trust God more. Maybe you should just pray more. You should probably just go to church more. That'll fix it. That's over-spiritualizing an answer. Instead, what we need to do, instead of over-spiritualizing, what we need to do is empathize with our fellow strugglers. We empathize. There's a special word for this in the New Testament. It's the first word in this verse, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. The word in English we get is encourage. Encourage. Paul writes, encourage each other and build each other up just as you were already doing. This word encourage shows up in your New Testament over 100 times. It's a major theme in the New Testament. It's a big deal. The word literally means, I love this, in the original language, the word literally means to come alongside someone, to stand with them, to walk with them. I think the best thing that I've said in this entire series, go all the way back to week one. You can check the tape. Go all the way back to week one. I think the best thing I've said in this entire series, and I think it's been pretty good. Most of you have agreed. I think the best thing I've said is this. This is right from my notes from week one. I don't have to understand everything you are going through. And you don't have to understand everything that I deal with. Here's the good line. Ready? But I don't have to understand to stand with you. That's empathy. That's encouraging. That's coming alongside someone. That's what empathy does. Someone shares with you their struggle with mental health, and empathy says, I'm so sorry. I hate that for you. Thanks for trusting me. Thanks for sharing that with me. It must be so hard. How can I support you in this? You see the difference? This is so important. Our task, our job here, folks, is not to fix people. Our task is to represent Jesus to people. Paul writes a few verses later, encourage. Say that word out loud with me. Encourage, two verses later, encourage the disheartened and help the weak. Be patient with everyone. Listen, to be patient means you don't see people as problems. You see people with problems. You hear the difference? So let's stand with. Let's come alongside. Let's walk with each other, even through the messy parts, even through the parts we think we need to hide, because we need each other. That's the first strategy. Here's strategy number two. We can choose to be, I'm going to call that, I love this phrase, an extra grace place. We can choose to be an extra grace place. One way to determine if a church values grace is to notice how they welcome people who need extra amounts of it. And one of the things that I love about the Jesus movement, going all the way back to the beginning, all the way back to Jerusalem, all the way back to the day of Pentecost and the book of Acts, one of the things that has made the Jesus movement stand out in a performance-driven world is the way that the Jesus movement champions the worth of people who tend to be devalued, like the unborn, or the single mom, or the poor, or the immigrant, or the imprisoned, or the disabled, or the people with mental health challenges. You see, it is one thing to welcome the conversation. It is another thing to welcome people who are always going to need more from us than they will ever be able to give back. And I better say that again, because I don't think you were paying attention. It's one thing to welcome people who are always going to need more from us than they can ever give back. That's what Jesus people do. Getting ready for this series, one of the things that I did was I read from authors and blog posts and listened to really smart people, but people who are dealing with diagnosed mental health challenges, and to kind of get their perspective. One of these authors wrote, and I didn't write it down, I just copied and pasted this paragraph. I've got to get their name. Here's what they wrote on their blog. I think this was a guy. He says, here's what we need from the church. Talking about people with diagnosed mental health challenges. Here's what we need from the church. We need someone to help us see that our suffering has value. That it's not completely pointless to have this struggle. We need assurance that our difficult lives have purpose. That even with our struggles, that the world is a better place because we're in it. And most of all, we need to find a place to belong. Maybe the most poignant sentence I read in my research was this one sentence. Again, same author. Again, someone who's dealing with a mental health challenge. He writes, people avoid us because we're different. And we become more different because we're excluded from the benefits of living in community. Carlene Hill Byron wrote a book. Her book is called Not Quite Fine. I like the title. Not Quite Fine. She is a devout follower of Jesus, strong Christian woman, but she has also lived most of her life diagnosed with bipolar disorder. The book is about this, or part of the book is about this special relationship that she has with her church. Let me read. This is several paragraphs, so stick with me as I kind of walk through this. But it's too good to not share, right? Here's what Carlene Hill Byron writes. She says, I am part of the body. Again, she's talking about the church. Someone who's diagnosed bipolar, mental health challenge. I am part of the church. I may be a peculiar part, but I am a part. I have gifts to offer which could benefit the church, the world, or both. But if the body chooses to overlook me, it's chosen to lose the use of whatever part God has designed me to be. Even if I'm as unlovely and invisible a part of the body as a bowel duct, the body loses a God-essential function without me. I face challenges, most of which really aren't all that different from the challenges you face. They're experienced more deeply because of my mental health problems and because they come to me with such strong emotions and unusual thoughts. It's taken me many years to learn how to manage my responses. I've been greatly helped by friendships with wise people who practiced and developed new skills I need. Many of those are people without significant mental health problems because it's hard to learn ordinary behaviors from those who have yet to master them. She goes on, God's people and God's word are powerful to give me and everyone life. I gain life among God's people when I'm welcome, when I'm given opportunities to serve with the gifts that God's given me, and when I'm allowed to learn human living from other humans. God's people and God's word misused are powerful to deal me death. When you label my challenges as demons or name me as unsuited to be a part of the body that you lead, you cast your shroud of fear and isolation over me. Those are tools of the enemy, not of God. And then she wraps up this section with this paragraph. My clinicians and peer supports know more about how to manage my illness than the church does. And that's how it should be, she writes. She says, I don't expect my church to know as much about cancer or kidney disease as clinicians and doctors and peer supports would. I just expect the church to offer me the same kind of support it provides in all of those situations as well. At the very least, she wraps up, at the very least, sympathy and kindness can go a long, long way. People with extra grace demands really need healthy churches. But here's the thing, church. Healthy churches really need people. If we're going to be healthy churches, we really need people with extra grace demands. Because the healthiest communities are the ones who have a space for people who aren't always at their healthiest. To illustrate that, I want to show you a picture of my all-time favorite small group. There they are. This is the best small group that's ever been. You have to admit it. If you know anything about this group, you know that this group is a mess. Christopher Robin is probably the only healthy person in the group. Think about this. Pooh Bear, serious ADHD. Serious. Piglet, little Piglet, general anxiety disorder. Eeyore, you already know that one. He is clinically depressed. Rabbit has OCD. You know he does. You know. You just know. Owl, where's Owl? Owl is a narcissist. Tigger, hyperactivity disorder. And dear sweet Kanga, where's Kanga go? There she is. Dear sweet Kanga with her little baby Roo. Dear sweet Kanga, she struggles with social anxiety. But yet, they make such a wonderful group, a wonderful small group. You know why? Because they don't base acceptance on performance. They give each other extra grace. And isn't that how God treats us in Jesus Christ? Paul writes in Romans 15, accept each other just as Christ has accepted you, so that God will be given glory. How did Christ accept you? Did Christ say, hey, whenever you get your stuff all put together, then you can come be a part of my family? No. Did Christ say, hey, when you don't need any grace, then I maybe can spare a little bit? No. Accept each other the way that Christ accepted you. And I want to be a part. I want to be a part of a church where things like that can happen. I want to be at a church where people who need extra grace now and then feel welcome. I want to help build a church that gives extra grace to people Because the day's coming when I'm going to need some extra grace too. And I'm going to need a church that offers that to me. So that's what we can choose to do. We can choose to be a place that makes extra space for extra grace. You know, I think Jesus set the perfect example of this for us. Read through the biographies of Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and you will see again and again that the ministry of Jesus had a profound impact on the mental health of the people he encountered. Think about things that Jesus did. He's creating community. He's helping people find their identity and purpose and meaning in God. He's giving people meaning and value. He's dispelling shame. He's dispensing hope. What's he doing? He's creating a community that has better mental health. That's what we want to be. And the best thing we can offer anyone is to get to know Jesus better. Because only Jesus can give us supernatural strength and peace. That's what he promised. A peace that you can't explain, but that you can't explain away. Again, the words of Paul, 2 Thessalonians. Now may the Lord of peace himself give you his peace at all times and in every situation. The Lord be with you all. Let me pray for you. If our communion team will take their places, please. God, I pray that you will take this message. God, I pray you will take this entire sermon series and use it to bring glory to your name. Take it, God, take this message wherever it can help anyone. Because we want people to find hope and health in Jesus. That Jesus only leads us to what is good. So God, please take this message to our church and help us lead people to Jesus. Jesus, we want to love you with all of our hearts, our soul, and our minds. So help us to keep our thoughts on you and help us encourage others to think about you too. We pray this in your name.